All right, we're live.
Welcome back to Talk with Army. I'm your co-host, Delilah.
And I'm your co-host, Daisy.
And we are still in Army Anonymous in the... I was not prepared. I thought I had the document up, and I didn't. The internal fandoms issue category. We just started that, so we're just going to pick up where we left off.
Exactly. So this first submission here says, Army's getting complacent in not participating in voting and streaming. Frowny face, and then this is from the USA. In fact, I'm going to read a couple more of these that are kind of like on the same, like it's around the same topic. And then the one after that, it says, enough armies aren't streaming. Armies aren't focusing on BTS. I'm worried. This is from Jamaica. And then a third one that says, I think our fandom is not doing much in streaming and voting. Our voting and streaming organizations have to beg people to join. Why can't some armies do it by themselves and some even opposed to it? Why are you here as an army then? I want to see our fandom in unity and enthusiasm so that those aunties don't dare to question the boys or our capabilities as a fan. And this is from India. Yeah, so to basically kind of just summarize all of these, the general consensus is that a lot of people do think that some armies are slacking in voting in streaming. And we've kind of had conversations like this before on other episodes. It may have been other Army Anonymous, I don't remember. But like, there's like two sides to this where there are times where I see some people and it's like they're kind of focusing on the wrong things. Like, you're busy being a shooter army, but you're not voting, you're not streaming, et cetera, et cetera. And then those types of people, you know, they always get so much clout, but then they never, you know, take the time out of their day to actually properly support BTS. And then the other side of things, where it's like, we also have to keep in mind that there have been a lot of different rule changes that have happened to different streaming platforms and charts within the past year. And so even if we're streaming at our best, there's no possible way that we're ever going to be making numbers or beating records the way that we were last year, simply because the rules are just so different now. So there's two sides to this, and I think that there is definitely a lot more nuance than people think there is, but it is something that does need to be discussed every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is something to be said about maybe people feeling like, you know, BTS are deciding to maybe slow down a bit in their careers, and so then that way maybe we don't have to do as much. But I think like what Daisy said is, I think a lot of people are just becoming fed up with the system because it is just constantly acting against us and against BTS, and there's always so many changes to streaming and changes to like filtering rules and stuff. Like, we've seen that it is possible to pay Spotify to filter streams less, including from accounts that aren't even premium accounts. Because if you have a premium account on Spotify, your streams are less likely to be filtered as much. And labels can pay Spotify to give their artists a lower filtering rate, which is just absolutely insane to me. Like, I kind of don't understand why that is even a thing, because regardless, everything should be filtered through the exact same process. Like, I just don't, that's just, it's so shady, and I think that we have to stop beating ourselves up over being unable to tackle this issue.
Yeah, because I think that in regards to paying off Spotify so that your music has less of a filtration rate, I think that that stuff is so sleazy. It's basically just another version of payola. And the fact that people are doing this, like the fact that Spotify allows this to happen, especially given the fact that Spotify already gets so much money from artists as is, because for all who don't know, In terms of how much artists get paid on Spotify, they get paid like pennies, bro. Like, if you look at the amount of money that you get per stream, it is absolutely like nothing.
Just
And
abysmal.
so, yeah, it's just abysmal. And so, for you to actually rack up a lot of money from Spotify, you have to have thousands upon hundreds of thousands, probably even millions of views, is what I should be saying. And a lot of artists just don't have that. A lot of artists don't have that many listeners that are tuning in every single month or for new releases. And so you're really only going to get such a small percentage of artists that are actually making somewhat of a profit from Spotify. And even then, it's still way less than the amount they should be making. And so, given that circumstance, it is just absolutely crazy that Spotify is still greedy for more money and taking bribes from other people as if they don't already get the most as is. And that type of stuff just like really, really pisses me off. And so with things like that, of course, we're always going to have, shady people we're always going to be I guess competing against. And because BTS and Big Hit, they never have done these payola deals or any type of bribery within the US music industry, of course, they're always going to be getting the short end of the stick because, at the end of the day, the success that BTS has gotten, both domestically and internationally, is no thanks to the industry itself. The industry has not helped them in any way. They haven't pushed them to the top in any way. BTS and Big Hit haven't paid them money to get bigger. And the amount of success that BTS has right now is solely down to the actual organic demand that is present. And so because of that, and the fact that they can't profit off of BTS and Big Hit, that's why all these people just constantly shove BTS out. They constantly make sure that BTS is getting absolutely no radio play. They make sure that they have the highest filtration rates. Like, there's just so much shady business going on. And on top of that, because of the fact that BTS is Korean and the majority of their discography is in Korean, you have that extra generous dash of racism and xenophobia. So even if, like, other artists were also getting the short end of the stick, they would probably be what like better off than BTS if they were white. Like, that's just the truth. That's how it is. And so it can be incredibly frustrating to have to deal with so many instances of these platforms and these charts constantly changing their rules to make sure that armies can't, give BTS the success that they deserve. And then have people say it's all down to armies not trying hard enough. And it's like, well, yeah, sure. Maybe there might be some armies who could do better, but also we have to keep in mind that we have been fighting against the music industry for years now, and they have been just always looking to change the rules and give excuses for why BTS somehow doesn't deserve the top spot. And so it can be pretty frustrating to just see so many people on the timeline just being like, oh, you're not trying hard enough. And there are a lot of people who are taking the time out of their day to give the best support that they can. And, because of the way that these charts work and the way that these platforms work, sometimes they just don't care. And they just end up cutting, streaming numbers. They end up, cutting points from Billboard charts. Like, there's just so much going on. I don't even have time to discuss it. I'm sure there's always been commentary on this on things like YouTube and Twitter, and of course, but it's a very big issue.
I also think the last part of this is there needs to be some grace toward armies because I feel like the last puzzle piece of this is like fandom burnout. Because, like you said, if we've been fighting for years, and maybe not everyone, some people maybe just got into the fandom like 6 months ago. But for people that have been here for maybe 2 or 3 years, especially pandemic armies, and then especially people like you and me who've been here since 2015, 2016, there has to be, a point where everyone should be allowed to recharge. I think there should be a point where you should be able to go a few months without trying to figure out what's the best playlist, what's the new charting methods. I think doing that every day for so many months or years has just led to people feeling burnt out. And then on top of that, you know, with the industry constantly changing rules, it's like kicking someone when they're already down. And so I feel like people just need to understand that even if armies take a dip in voting, a dip in streaming, that might be necessary. So then that way people could have this break. So then that way a few months later down the line, we can come back, you know, better and stronger. I think we have such high expectations for ourselves. And when those expectations are never met, we always have to blame ourselves and blame each other. And it's just, it's not healthy to continuously set very high standards and then be so angry and upset when we can't keep consistently meeting the same high standard.
Yeah, because I mean, we got a lot of that when Proof dropped, and after the first tracking week, and we saw that Yet to Come was number 13 on the Hot 100. And there were so many people who tried to say that, oh, US armies and PR armies weren't streaming hard enough. But then at the same time, it's like we've seen the rule changes with Billboard and how, you know, sales are weighing less than they were before. And they're also limiting the amount of digital downloads that we could get per day or whatever, something like that. There was just a lot of different things that happened. And so, you know, with so many different restrictions on us, we're obviously not going to be getting the same numbers that we were before. And on top of that, our filtration rates with BTS on all sorts of streaming platforms are already so high because for some reason, no one can believe that the biggest group in the world would ever have a lot of streams. And I mean, that's a whole conversation for another day. But, you know, all those things working against us. The first reaction was for people to just immediately be negative because we're used to being in the top 10. We're used to topping the Billboard chart. And so to see it number 13, it almost seems like we failed. But it's like with all the stuff that was working against us. What other
K-pop group has even gotten in the top 20? Like,
no one.
Maybe Blackpink, and I'm saying that just to cover my ass because I'm not exactly sure what their highest one was, but
it might have been like 24 or something.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think it was like 24. I don't think it was even top 20. So the fact that so many of these other, you know, Korean artists haven't even made it to the Billboard Hot 100, and yet they look at BTS and say that they failed. Like, babe, you're 10th place in the race calling the silver medalist a loser. Like, look at yourself. I think people are internalizing that. They see all these people saying, oh, look, BTS just isn't at the top of their game anymore. BTS, you know, they used to be so much better. They're losing ground. And just all of this nonsense that is, once again, ignores contextual factors about the industry, and people see these comments, internalize it, and continuously feel like they have to prove themselves. And we don't have to keep proving ourselves. It's number 13 is really good. And I think that we really need to be a lot kinder to each other.
I do agree. I mean, while I do agree that at the same time, we always need to try our best to support BTS when the time calls for it, we also need to offer grace and just be nicer to each other when it is time to be in BTS lockdown mode, whether it's comeback season, whenever, you know, somebody's dropped something new. Because this whole mentality where people just go on the timeline and just complain and berate and finger point, I mean, if people weren't motivated before, they definitely wouldn't be after you've done all of that, because all it does is put negativity on the timeline. It dismisses the efforts of people who are already trying their best against an industry that was already rigged to see them fail. And it just, like Delilah said, it just feels like kicking somebody when they're already down. I don't think it's helpful to have this mentality that we're just not doing enough without contextualizing the situation. I think that we need to have a regroup and look at the rules and look at what is possible with those rules and figure out a new way for us to create goals that are good and that can motivate people to stream and to do all sorts of things without setting overly high expectations on the fans that just will never ever be realistic for the situation.
Exactly. And I think with that, we'll move on to the next submission that's a little bit similar to the other ones. This one says, I wanted to say it for a long time, but since I'm a small account, no one is going to pay attention to me and can take my words negatively. But the current situation of our fandom is really not so good. We are struggling with literally everything from voting to streaming. YouTube was our strongest point. And also voting, but we are struggling the most. And I'm very scared that if it goes on like this, the fear BTS has will come true, which is they won't get support like before, and I don't want it to happen at all. I want everyone in this fandom to wake up and stop fighting with unnecessary stuff, and all the big accounts to small accounts to spread messages that support our boys. And this is from Bangladesh. And I think I understand what they mean by BTS's fear is coming true, because that's why we worked so hard to get Life Goes On to number one, because of Namjoon saying, like, this fear that if they write songs in Korean, it's just, it'll never be as good as an English song, and made him doubt his message that, you know, music transcends languages. And we were like, no. You, sir, are never going to doubt yourself again. And so we made Life Goes On go to number one. We made that happen. And, you know, of course, since then there's been all these Billboard rule changes and whatnot. But regardless, Life Goes On, number one on the Billboard Hot 100. So I think, you know, ARMYs do care about BTS's message. And I'm pretty sure, you know, sure BTS has this fear, but I mean, they've had this fear since, like, 2016. I mean, it's one of the, you know, main parts of the lyrics in Young Forever. And so, right. I think that while, you know, streaming or voting or, like, YouTube views might not be as astronomical as they were, look at Lollapalooza. Look how many ARMYs were there supporting Hobi and how happy he was and just how excited he was to just have all of the ARMYs there and just have all that energy. I think that, you know, sure, maybe other things, you know, might not be as high, but they're always going to be selling out these stadiums. They're always going to have so many people around, like so many ARMYs that are going to, you know, show up for their performances, that I think that, you know, BTS, they're going to be okay. And I really don't see them feeling like ARMYs don't have their back just anytime soon. There's nothing they've said recently to indicate that. In fact, literally, you know, just Jin the other day was on that show talking about how, like, pretty much it's just BTS and ARMY, that's what he has. And so, unless, you know, BTS indicate some sort of, you know, fear that, unless they explicitly say they feel like they're not getting support, I'm not going to assume that that's how they feel, because they know that ARMYs are the ones that are always there for them and know that ARMYs are why they are where they are now. And so I don't want BTS to be talking about their feelings and BTS to be vulnerable and talk about these fears they have, and then us take those conversations out of context and use it to, you know, be nasty to each other and say, oh, you're not streaming and voting enough. You're the reason why BTS, you know, feels like they don't have support and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, no, they didn't share those feelings with us to make us fight with each other. Like, you don't need, you just, like, just take their words as is, and you don't need to keep using their words, like, to turn us against each other. I feel like that's what keeps happening, and I don't think it's fair, and it's not fair to each other, and it's not fair to BTS.
Exactly. I think that there just needs to be a middle ground, and like you were saying, Delilah, even though our numbers may not be as astronomical as before, they're still selling out places and doing all these incredible things. BTS has gotten to a point in their lives where I don't think that they will ever fully go back down to the bottom. Like, they have just done so much for millions of people around the world and done so much for their country itself that, like, their names, I mean, they're technically already cemented in history books already in their own country. And people are going to remember them as the Korean act who has been able to go this far. Like, I don't think that people really give credit to their impact and just the stability of their fan base. And I think that, you know, while it is a valid fear to have of one day just not having all of this and one day BTS isn't as big as this, but at the same time, I feel like we're just so well established that to just kind of make it seem like, oh, if we don't break our records for this one comeback, then suddenly it's all over for BTS. I feel like it's a very do or die mindset that puts a lot of stress on people when comeback does come. And I think that we need to go back to streaming because we just want BTS to see that we enjoy their music and that a lot of people are consuming it, rather than having to kind of put false fears by twisting BTS's words into, like, armies and, like, just have people just kind of doing it more out of an obligation rather than because they genuinely enjoy it. Because I think that once you stop enjoying comeback season, like, that is a problem. Like, the whole point of being able to support BTS the way that we do is that it's enjoyable to us. And we do it out of our love for the music. And this is our way of showing appreciation. But the way that some people kind of make comeback season out to be, and the way that people kind of sometimes spread negativity during comeback season, I don't think that it will ever equip people with the right mindset to be able to support BTS the way that we did in 2021 and 2020 and previous years, so on and so forth. And so I think that, I mean, especially given the fact that Jin's single is about to come out soon, we do need to have a more positive mindset on the timeline so we can encourage people to be doing their best rather than berating people and then having people just lose motivation because all they're doing is getting yelled at on Twitter.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that sums that up. And I feel like we've talked about the same sentiment a few times before too, probably in like other Army Anonymous episodes and maybe some other Talk with Army episodes, you know, just about the whole fear of, you know, not being as big as you once were. But I think that to constantly be stressed about that, it's just not good for anyone involved. So I do just hope that there can be more just understanding and, like I said earlier, I think the word is grace given to armies. And with that, we'll go to the next submission. This one says, I think we have grown impatient and intolerant for some time now. Since joining the fandom in 2017, I have witnessed the mess of Mama voting in 2017, the great as well as terrible year of 2018, and many things that happened in the following years, as I'm rather active on Twitter. We were a community. Now we are more like different sects with different opinions and a particular person at the center of the sect. I never minded people getting big platforms. I become happy for them. But I am also of the belief that with great power comes great responsibility. When you have at least 10K regularly engaging with you and you single out someone with a quoted tweet, it's a very different nature of engagement than it would have been if you had quoted them as a small account. The 10K other people would not have been up their asses like sheep because you singled them out. I have other concerns regarding intolerance and impatience of army behavior, but I'll end it here. Purple Heart from Bangladesh. Yeah, no, this is actually something that me and Daisy were talking about just like a few days ago. We're like, I understand that Twitter accounts, you know, they're fans just like us. And, you know, they're people just like us. But also, no, they're not. Like, I'm sorry, if you have 10,000 followers, 20, 30,000 followers, you have influence. Like, what you right. put so much onto other people's timelines, and this whole, oh, I'm just a Twitter account, like, I'm no different than all of you. Like, it's technically not true, and I think that is the hard pill to swallow. Like, no big account shouldn't be treated like celebrities, which is usually what that sentiment is, like, being targeted toward. Like, oh, you know, just because someone has 20,000 followers doesn't mean they're better than someone with less followers. But also, if you have a lot of followers, you do have responsibility. And I feel like so many people just don't care. And it's just so off-putting to just not care and be like, oh, well, you know, I'm just like you. So, like, I feel like I don't need to care what I put on my Twitter account because, you know, it's my account. Like, yes, part of that is true, but I also think it's very ignorant. And I think that you think you live in, like, this bubble. Your Twitter account was in this bubble, and it's really not. And I think what is outside of that bubble matters and is important.
Right, because when you have big accounts, like you said, they are not just a regular person anymore. They are somebody with an influence. And yes, influence is on a spectrum, and everyone has influence to an extent. But when your account is, you know, it has 10K followers, 20K followers, 30K followers, you do need to start thinking a little bit more. I'm not even going to say a little bit more, a lot more about what you post and, you know, how that may seem to other people, like how that is perceived by others. Because it's one thing if you're just like posting random stuff. For example, if you're a big account that's posting, I don't know, pictures of BTS eating, I don't know, like you're not really doing much with that account. And if you're not saying anything on that account either, it's not like it really matters. But if you're somebody who has a lot of strong opinions and you have a very big account, yes, you do have responsibility. And I understand that technically, in the sense that we're all human, they are kind of like us, because as humans do, we make mistakes, we're not perfect. And I do think that big accounts still should be awarded grace when they do make a mistake. And I think that that is something completely, like, it's a completely different conversation. My problem is people who do have big accounts who are irresponsible with their platform and then refuse to take accountability for it because they're quote unquote just like the rest of, you know, army Twitter, when that's not true. I mean, yes, I don't act that much different from back when my account was smaller in 2018. But now that I have almost 35,000 followers, it's like, of course, I'm gonna have to be careful. Because if I say the wrong thing, if I spread the wrong message, that can then negatively impact, you know, whoever I'm talking about, or whatever I'm talking about, it can influence my followers. Who are more likely to trust what I say. And I think that being able to hold yourself accountable in those situations is super, super important, which is why when you have big accounts and they're just constantly, you know, giving attention to certain things, or they're just singling people out, I do think that that type of thing is fairly irresponsible. I rarely, you know, directly quote tweet people, for example, unless it's like something mundane or whatever. But in terms of, like, you know, discourse that's like negative, Like I'm negatively responding to something. Like usually I just make separate tweets for that because I just don't want the whole drama of having to directly involve somebody in the quote tweets and all that kind of stuff. But you have some big accounts in the fandom that are just like super, super messy. And unfortunately, because of the way that the fandom operates now, like this person said, it's like almost like different sectors now. And you know, there is kind of like a core cast of accounts that kind of are at the center of that sect. It can get pretty difficult when, you know, particular big accounts are being irresponsible and they're not getting corrected by their followers. And anyone who tries to call them out maybe gets blocked. Maybe they send their own followers to attack them. Like there's a lot that goes wrong with that kind of stuff.
Right. I really hate that people think that they can just give engagement to whoever without thinking about it. Like, you really have to be intentional on the internet, especially platforms, like Twitter, where conversation and discourse is just not, it's not able to flow as it would be. I don't even think there's like really that many other platforms for discourse to take place, unless it's, like me and Daisy with this podcast. But then again, that's kind of no different than, if we were talking in person, we would be saying the same things we are now in person. But when it comes to typing something up and putting it on the internet, there's not really a forum that allows for discourse to take place in a way that is healthy and allows for nuance. And because Twitter just has this lack of nuance, and because it has this lack of nuance, it also creates a lack of intentionality. And I think intention is just so important because you know what people say? They say, okay, maybe you didn't intend for this, but impact matters more than intention. It doesn't matter what you intended it to be. The point is, this is what people are saying now. And so I think that people should be more mindful and just actually not take, I don't know, not take their platform for granted and see it for what it is. I don't think like some people necessarily take their platform for granted, but I think they just don't understand exactly what their platform is, and therefore it is so easy to misuse it. And so, sure, big accounts, yeah, they're not these celebrities, but also they're not just normal accounts either. I think that's this whole narrative of, oh, big accounts are no different from small accounts. Like, it's a hard pill to swallow once again. It's just not true.
Right, like thinking about how many followers some of us have, like even just me, like almost 35,000 followers. That is literally like if I was speaking in front of an arena full of people, like imagine just an arena of like 20 to 30K seat capacity, and I'm just talking in front of every single person there and they're nodding and clapping along to everything I say. That's literally what it is. If you take the amount of followers and think about like fitting them into like a venue, like it's incredible to think about how many army accounts actually have a lot of clout. Some of them have like a couple hundred
300,000
thousand
followers,
followers.
right?
I mean, BTS chart data, he's got 1 million followers. That is like 10 stadiums of people who are following this guy. And I mean, he's fairly unproblematic, so it's not like I'm even complaining about that. But the fact that people have that influence and somehow still don't understand what that means, I think that once you get to like a, being a big account, you really need to take the time to understand that now your platform is not the same as it was before, and you need to understand how that affects things in terms of what you say and what you do with said platform.
Yeah, I agree completely. And with that, I guess we'll go on to our next submission. This one says, BTS have said time and time again they aren't going anywhere. When they're on a group break or the E word happens, their promise remains the same. I hate seeing these fearful TikToks and tweets misinterpreting anything they say about uncertainty of their future. I know Festa has made us all on edge, but why should I do anything but believe what BTS themselves have said? What's funny to me is BTS have said to take their words as is, and yet people still are reaching so far up their own asses to make connections that don't exist. People overanalyze everything they say as being them hinting to possibly ending. Their award speeches shouldn't have turned into "what if this is the last time" tweets. BTS are aware that ARMY are anxious, which is why they keep being as honest as they can about what's next. And I know we joke about life before and after Festa 2022, but damn, it's getting annoying as they're doing such amazing individual and group projects. Let's focus on that, please. From the United States of Annoyance. Yeah, we're no longer the United States of America. USA stands for United States of Annoyance. You heard it here.
Period. But to address this person's submission, yeah, when it comes to all this fear mongering based off of reading between the lines and basically interpreting BTS's words is completely different to what they actually said. It's been happening for so long. I think arguably since like 2018. And so many times people have said, bro, can you stop saying that this is the last time, that oh, maybe this is a goodbye song. I remember they even started, I think this all started from like, what was that song? Let Go from their Japanese album Face
Oh
Yourself.
my goodness, I totally forgot. Yes.
Yeah, people were like, oh, what if this was their goodbye song to us and then they decided to stay together and so they just decided to put in their Japanese album. I'm like, shut up. Even if they had decided to disband, they would just outright tell us. Why do you think that BTS would go through all these different cryptic methods instead of just outright communicating to their fans, considering the fact that BTS has just always been honest with us? So why would they ever try and be cryptic or dishonest or omit information about something as important as disbandment? Does that make sense to you?
Nope, it does not. And now that you mentioned the whole Let Go thing, yeah, people have been saying this for so long, and I think part of it is because we did have an award speech where they opened up about considering disbandment, and they were very vulnerable during that speech. But like since then, it feels like everyone is just thinking, what if this is the last time? And I feel like BTS have made it clear that they want to be together for like 30, 40, 50 more years. So even if, what they're doing might not be the same, I don't think we're gonna get our last time for a while. I think that BTS are just one of those groups that's going to stand the test of time, and we've done a whole episode about like the longevity of groups. Like, it is not unheard of for groups to be together for, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, and I've talked about this on a separate episode, but if you didn't hear it, what I talked about in that episode was that time where Jungkook had made an appearance on that Korean variety show called Celebrity Bromance, where they basically pair up male idols with I guess other male idols, and then just see what they talk about. They might do something like, I don't know, go out, do an outing, play a game or something, and during that time, they basically kind of just deepen their chemistry. And Jungkook got paired with Minwoo from Shinhwa, who is somebody that they had respected because they were a group that had gone on for decades. Because Shinhwa is a Generation One K-pop group, they have been together for a long, long while. And Jungkook was talking to Minwoo about how BTS aspired to stay as a group for as long as Shinhwa had. and that they were trying to work on the best ways in which they could preserve that longevity. Because obviously, when you have all these different groups, a lot of times, sometimes personal greed will get in the way, and people may think that they are bigger than the group and that they can do so much better without the group. And that's what can lead groups to break up, because, you know, some people just get selfish and then they end up just unintentionally sabotaging everybody else's career. And that's what it's similar to, kind of what Jin was talking about in his in the TV show that, well, not the TV show, the YouTube show that he was just on the other day. And he was saying that the reason why BTS's team dynamic is so good is because all of the members are able to concede for everyone else, and that no one is allowing their greed to distract them from being a part of the team, and that they're all good at keeping themselves like grounded. They're all good at understanding what needs to be done for the sake of the team. And, you know, that's just something that they've been working on for a long while. So when you hear stuff like this, you know, it just kind of doesn't make sense the way that people constantly say every single comeback, oh, this is their last one, this is their last one, this is their last one. And it's gotten to the point where it's like, if you're saying it this much, like, do you want them to disband? Is this why you keep on speaking it into existence? I don't understand all this manifestation for this being BTS's very last album. Like, I don't know why people do that.
I don't know either. And what you said about, you know, Jin on that web show saying, you know, the members have gone this far because of their ability to concede for the sake of the team. When I saw Jin say that, I was felt with like this rush of validation, because you and I literally talked about that in one of our episodes, because there were so many, when, you know, BTS were saying, or like especially, you know, Rapline members talking about how they feel like, you know, in some songs they aren't able to display all of their abilities. And people took that as such a negative thing to say, oh, you know, being in the group is holding them back, or Big Hit has just been holding them back. And it's like, in a sense, they were held back, but they also consciously made that choice. They chose to sacrifice a small part of themselves for the team. And that is something me and Daisy talked in-depthly about. And to hear Jin confirm that, it was so good to hear, because it feels like the way we are interpreting BTS's words is correct. if that makes sense.
No, like, I totally get you. Like, it makes me feel like we truly are connected to that 7G.
Not 7G. I was drinking water as you said that. Bad time to take a sip. Okay, I'm good. But yeah, it's just all of these assumptions and just trying to add all like these double meanings when BTS are already so upfront with us about how they're feeling. Like, if they were explicitly talking about, oh, this is going to be their last comeback, I think there would be a message. Like, we would get like a 3 a.m. message from Weverse saying BTS to release final album of their entire career, or like something like that. Like, we would all once again feel the shift we felt when the enlistment announcement was first posted, and we would explicitly read that it is going to be the last time. So everyone, stop manifesting it. Stop it.
Literally stop it. Like, we're tired. The audience is sick of it. And so, yeah, with that, we will move on to the next submission. And this submission says, this is months late, and I'm not trying to drag things back up, but I like to sit and think on some things before I speak. I was thinking back on the Jack in the Box rollout and how some, and I mean some because I know the girls like to tussle, were so angry about the CD being digital and not physical. There were literally photo cards and photo shoots. I personally thought it was a smart choice, because making the type of CD that certain people wanted is expensive. from album art to producing the photo book and even packaging all costs money and that he will have to pay back as an artist himself. I feel like that was the bigger point people are missing, maybe, that it's easier to pay back production costs of the album when it's split seven ways versus one. Also, it made it way easier for him to release the album in enough time before his Lollapalooza debut. I just feel like people claiming Sabotage over a digital album is doing too much. Anyway, Jack in the Box is a 10 out of 10 album, Chef's Kiss, and this is from the US of A. I definitely agree with this because when it comes to the whole issue with the Jack in the Box rollout, and we talked about this in, I believe it was episode 48.
OP, you are not late. Don't feel too late to talk about this because I always have things to say about this. So, like, don't feel bad. This is not too late to bring back up.
In fact, it's right on time, given the fact that now that Jin's single has been announced and his albums are now available for pre-order, people have seen that his albums are kind of like the standard traditional albums with, you know, the album packaging, and then there's a CD inside and there's a photo book or photo cards or what have you. And so people were like confused because it's like, oh, why is Jin's album like this, but Hobi's album was only digital? And so then, you know, that led to a lot of, for example, J-Hope's solo stands to basically accuse HYBE of giving Hobi the shortest end of the stick, and that they were only going to do this for Hobi because they don't actually care about Hobi, they only care about the other six members. And first of all, that narrative is so tired because every solo stand of every member says this about every single person in BTS. The Jungkook solo stands say that, oh, HYBE only hates Jungkook. The V solo stands will say HYBE only hates V. Like, every single solo stand is under the impression that the company hates their member, which is why it makes no sense for them to even say that, because it's like, if the company hates, you know, every single member, then like, what was the point in even debuting of a K-pop group? But exactly. Anyway, back to my original point. In terms of this rollout, I think that a lot of people just, like I was saying in episode 48, a lot of people just think that he was not present for this decision to make his albums digital. And it's like, it's literally his work. Yes, it may have been a conversation he had between the company as to like what they would decide to do in terms of album packaging, but to think that he was, I don't know, tied up onto a chair and thrown into some back room while HYBE printed out digital albums instead of physical ones, and he just had to sit there and watch. Like, I don't know what you people think goes on within the HYBE building, but to act like he somehow was not present for those meetings and that he just didn't know, I don't get it.
And we literally predicted this in the episode. We literally said what's going to happen is if every single BTS solo release is not marketed, promoted, presented identically, people are going to have a huge fuss. They're going to say, oh, this member gets so much better treatment than this member because they're promotions, this person went on this show and that person didn't get to go on that show, or maybe this person decided to perform on M Countdown and someone else didn't. I don't know. I don't think any of them are going to perform on M Countdown, but if they do, that's their choice, even though I know it's probably not going to happen, but just as an example. Like, to say that just because Hobi didn't promote his album in the way you wanted it, that doesn't mean there wasn't any promotion at all. And to say, even though he's explicitly talked about how involved he was in the album, to then just completely ignore that and say, well, clearly it's not true because, you know, so-and-so member got all this and it was better. Like, if you don't like the way the album was presented, that's okay. But we have to stop doing this thing where if we like a decision, we say it's the members. And if we don't like a decision, we blame it on the company. Like,
exactly.
The fact that J-Hope made a decision, an artistic decision, and you disagreed with it, like, that is okay. Like, Hobi can do something and you cannot like that he did that. That is something that can occur. And so stop trying to speak over him and say it's not what he wanted just because it's not what you wanted. And then on top of that, because people were spreading all this misinformation about how, like, oh, it's not a real physical, oh, this is just, like, it's all for NFTs and stuff. And so there was all this discourse about, like, how terrible, you know, getting the album is, and it's not worth it. And then the sales weren't that high. And then everyone was like, oh, why were the sales so low? Like, you, like, why aren't people supporting Hobie? And I had to sit there and be like, look in the mirror. Like, I'm sorry. It makes me so mad that everyone had the audacity to talk so much crap about how the album was being presented and that they didn't like that it wasn't, you know, a physical, like, it wasn't your typical physical album. And then act all surprised when the sales weren't that high. Take some responsibility. And I said that before, and I'll say it again. Take some responsibility. This is why, you know, BTS, you know, sometimes they take creative risks. And instead of appreciating that risk, we just dog on it. I just don't understand. And then seeing people who got the physical album, and then all of these comments being like, wait, there was a physical? Or, wait, it came with, like, a jack-in-the-box and blah, 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 blah. Like, they're, like, you people just didn't read the announcement. You didn't read the album announcement. You didn't read the product on Weverse. Like, you didn't do your own research. You got angry because of false information other people said. And instead of taking that responsibility for not doing your due diligence, you're just going to blame it on the company who didn't do anything wrong in this instance.
Exactly. And it really just made me so angry, especially like now that the discourse has come back up, because I had made a thread on this a couple of days ago when the physicals for Jin's single were available to pre-order. And I was saying, oh, see how the packaging is different? Remember how we said that because of the members' preferences, not everyone's promotion and not everyone's album packaging is going to be the same. This is your clue. And, you know, within that thread, obviously, it did garner some attention. And then, of course, Hobie Solos found it. And they were saying stuff like, oh, you're such a Hobie antsy because, oh, you don't even care that he didn't even get, like, a real album or, like, a real comeback and blah, blah, blah. And, like, all this, like, the wording that they were using is just something that I really wanted to, like, hone in on. The fact that they were just using such negative language to describe what he gave us, basically amounting what he did to not good enough. And I think that that is just incredibly disrespectful and diminishes not only the art, but his artistic choices and his autonomy as a man in his late 20s. And I think that we really need to just, we really need to step back and ask ourselves, why are we using this language? What makes a real comeback? What makes a real album? And why is it that one way is the only way they're allowed to promote or the only way they're allowed to package an album and the other ways aren't as valid? I think that once we start there, we can start to really unravel some of the biases that we have within us and maybe open our minds to more possibilities, because the way that people reacted for Hobie and his digital album with the QR code was just absolutely ridiculous. The fact that people were saying, oh, he deserves better than this. It's like, deserves better than what? The 100K audience that he performed in front of in Chicago at Lollapalooza? Like, there are just so many things about the album promotions that were so good. And yet people chose to pinpoint something that they didn't like and made it such a horrible and negative experience, and then go and turn around and ask why the mood is down. It's you people's fault. You people had, you know, misinterpreted the information from the beginning, and then you spread that information across the entire ARMY Twitter and to other platforms. And then when people also started reacting to the, you know, the release of the album negatively, then of course you're going to get that type of perception. And then you go and ask what happened. It's all self-inflicted.
Yeah, that's I think the biggest issue that ARMY Twitter is facing right now. A lot of the blight in ARMY Twitter is just completely self-inflicted. And once we unravel that and understand that, I think then we can begin to progress again, because just like, right, I can't do this every solo release. I'm not gonna go through it, which is why we have this podcast, so we could record something, post it, and then not talk about it again, because we're not doing it. And as it, that's why Daisy just reposts her threads from like 2019, and we're in the year 2022, because it's like this discourse has just been beat over and over again, and I don't know how to make people understand it without like strapping their hands and legs to a chair and just like forcing them to like read a thread or like listen to this podcast. Like, I don't know how else people can just get the message, because I'm tired of having to repeat it. And I know everyone else horrendous. Is too. We're down horrendous. And also, to wrap up the submission, Jack in the Box was a 10 out of 10 album. I think it was absolutely phenomenal. It's an amazing album. I love everything about it. I can honestly talk nonstop about what a great album it is, just from like the presentation to just the track order and the production of the songs, the meaning of the songs. 10 out of 10 album indeed.
Love it. And so with that, the next submission, it says, TikTok armies really scare me sometimes. They seem more like aunties than anything else. I've seen more people spreading negative views on the guys than actually behaving like fans and spreading their music and votings. Is it because they're mostly multis who don't really care about the guys and token stand them for their achievements? Or do they like the validation from other fandoms? And this is from the USA. Yeah, there's been a lot of TikTok army slander recently, because some of these TikToks that I've seen that really paint BTS in a negative light have gotten a ridiculous amount of clout, which had shocked me, honestly, because I understand the TikTok. I mean, to an extent, most, if not all, social medias are an echo chamber in themselves, but I feel like TikTok is one of the bigger ones, because with Twitter, yes, it's an echo chamber, but at least you can still kind of hold conversations on there. But on TikTok, it's like you watch the video and you go into the comments and like, what, you maybe have like, I don't know, 140 characters to make your case, and not everyone's gonna see that. Like, there's a lot, because of the formatting of TikTok, that kind of does it a disservice in terms of proper discussion, because obviously that's not what the social media platform is for.
Right.
It's for making videos and to being and being able to share those videos across other platforms, et cetera, et cetera. And so I can understand in a way why I'm not like, why you're not going to get anything better from TikTok. But at the same time, because of that, I feel like some people just kind of use it to their advantage to spread all sorts of misinformation that just really does not help the boys or the fandom in any case at all.
It also has to do with like the TikTok algorithm, because the TikTok algorithm, it pays attention to how fast you scroll past a video. It pays attention to how many seconds long you watch a video or how long you're on someone's page. It is paying attention to how long you interact with the video, and that tells the TikTok algorithm, you like this content, you want to see more of it. So if people are, you know, interacting with a lot of content that paints BTS in a negative light, they're just going to keep receiving TikToks of content like that. It's just going to keep going. So I think with this person saying, you know, is it because they're multis who don't really like BTS as much as they say? Do they token stan? Like, do they want validation from other fandoms? What is it? And I think it's kind of like, it's probably a bit of all three, because I'm sorry, I genuinely don't understand how people can like see jokes about like Namjoon is a racist or something and then comment, I'm an army, but I found this so funny. Like, what?
No, you're not. You're not.
No, you're not an army. Like, stop it. So yeah, I feel like, honestly, I feel like there just aren't a lot of actual, real, big armies on TikTok, which is unfortunate, but I think that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, and also, like, another thing, just the way that information is spread on TikTok. In fact, I remember there was a particular TikTok. I don't remember what was the actual content of the TikTok, but it was related to BTS. And then it was saying something that was just, like, negative or, like, factually incorrect. And so, of course, when that TikTok spread to Twitter, you know, Twitter armies went to that TikTok and started commenting, like, hey, this is, like, a really bad take and blah, blah, blah. And then eventually they took it down and then made another TikTok video explaining themselves and whatever. And they were talking about how, oh, they got their information from, you know, TikTok. And so that's what they thought was going on. And it's like, so, like, you got your information from TikTok, which is already, like, at the very least secondhand. And that's me being generous. And so when you have all this information that's been summarized and summarized through different exchanges, you're going to end up with something completely different at the end of it. It's like playing a game of telephone. Oh, you've heard it from Twitter, and then someone on Twitter told someone on Instagram, who told someone on Reddit, who told somebody on TikTok. And then by that time, you're already like four times removed from the source of the information. So, of course, what you're going to get is not actually the source, the essence of what the original information is. And so this is why it can be incredibly dangerous for you to just be getting all sorts of information from armies, when in reality, what you need to be doing is getting the information from BTS themselves. So don't be going to other armies asking about, like, what BTS is doing or, like, what BTS has said. Why don't you just go to BTS's pages, their social media, their YouTube, their Weverse, and look for yourself at what they're saying and what they're doing? Stop relying on other people who could potentially misinterpret what is going on, and start looking for the original source yourself and draw your conclusions from there. And I feel like that is one of the biggest problems people have, especially with things like TikTok, because I've heard that TikTok is actually pretty notorious, where people will just use it for research instead of actually just doing proper research themselves. I remember someone had even told me that, like, apparently now, like, some students in, like, middle or high school would be, like, citing TikToks in, like, their assignments for school. And it's, like, so it's basically just, like, now the Wikipedia of the current generation. And that really disturbs me.
Oh, for sure. Like, TikTok is just not, like, don't get me wrong, TikTok can be great for information, just like any platform on the internet is. But it can't be your only source of information. Like, you cannot substitute academic research for TikTok. Like, it's just, it's not going to be the same. People need to learn media literacy. They need to learn what is good research, what is bad research. Because just because something is published research, just because something's an academic article, still doesn't mean it's good either, which also sucks, right? But right. Being able to understand that and learn that and be able to do your due diligence when researching, it's just a skill that not everyone is taught, and it is extremely upsetting. It kind of reminds me of a bit about, like, the archive of our own, like, the archive of our own discourse about how some people wish that the website was more like TikTok or Instagram, where there was an algorithm that recommended fanfics to you and stuff. And people, so many people that have been reading and writing fanfiction for years have explained so well why that is just an absolutely terrible idea. And a lot of it boils down to the fact that AO3 is an archive. A lot of the way it is set up, it's like how you would search an academic archive to find resources, to find specific things that you are looking for, specific keywords, how to take out specific keywords. And because people aren't being taught how to access, you know, this information, they're not being taught how to search for it, they just want it to come to them. They just want an algorithm to feed them things. When we should know by now, honestly, a lot of algorithms suck. I absolutely hate using Instagram because, like, almost like every 3, 4, 5 posts isn't even someone I'm following. It's like some other post that's just like promoted. And you know, I'm never seeing people's posts until like a week later, because Instagram for some reason decided that I wanted to see it a week later. It absolutely sucks, and there's nothing wrong with the way AO3 is formatted, but because people just want information fed to them, they don't want to put in the work to find it themselves. That's how, you know, we get all of these platforms like TikTok and Instagram and Twitter, where we can't have any decent discourse. And once again, right, it is not a good source of information, and people don't know how to find it. People don't know how to look for things anymore.
Exactly. Like, when I think about AO3, it's quite literally almost exactly set up the way that my university's library database is set up. Like, it will have the exact same way that you can add in filters, you can take out filters, you can put in keywords, you can do all sorts of things. I mean, that's how it's supposed to be built, so that you're not just getting spoon-fed information. You need to go out and look for it. You need to make sure that once you have those keywords and those filters in, you're getting exactly what you need to get. Because yeah, you can have, an AO3 account with an algorithm, and it's maybe throwing you suggestions, but at the end of the day, it's almost never exactly what you want. And a lot of times, just because it's being recommended and just because something is popular, that doesn't necessarily make it true or better than other types of content. And I think that's the biggest problem with what people wanted from it. And, you know, it's kind of, contributing to the problem with the way that people are researching information, especially bring this back to the context of BTS. And I think, you know, Delilah, because you and I are both psychology majors, we are naturally used to putting in that work to find information and to find credible sources, because we're used to doing that research. And so naturally, as you progress through your psychology degree, that media literacy pretty much gets ingrained into you. But a lot of people do not have that experience. And personally, I feel like schools just need to put in more classes on media literacy so that they have students who are equipped with the knowledge to be able to discern what is credible literature and what is not, instead of just going for the first thing that they see, the first page of the search engine results. Like, I feel like there's a lot of students right now who are just being told to do assignments, but then not being told the best way to look for the information for those assignments. And so you end up with a generation of kids and teenagers who grow up to be adults who are just looking to get spoon-fed information and not having to do any legwork themselves. And that's how they end up spreading all sorts of negative or inaccurate things about any type of topic. And then, you know, again, bring this back to the topic of BTS. That's how you end up with these people who are spreading TikToks that are just setting up the boys, that are absolutely disrespectful, or that are just spreading misinformation or disinformation. And it can get incredibly frustrating. And so this is why I definitely feel like there needs to be an overhaul on TikTok, because while I do appreciate the cool edits and all that kind of stuff, when it comes to the videos where people actually give commentary, there is so much of it that is done in such bad faith that gets so much clout that it actually, like, it baffles me.
Exactly. I think that, let me see. I go over this. Yeah, I don't know. I've tried to reread the submission to see how far off topic we got again. But yes, TikTok armies, I think part of it, you know, just is the platform they're on. And also a big part of it is I genuinely think there's just not enough, like, actual genuine, like, big army accounts on there. That's just how the cookie crumbles, which is really unfortunate. So maybe it would be nice if, you know, if there were people that got on TikTok and made a platform out of correcting misinformation. I think that would be really good if people could start doing that and maybe combat this issue. But yeah, I definitely do not like to go on TikTok for any, you know, BTS K-pop discourse.
Yeah, it just never makes me happy to be on there. I just like to look at the pretty edits and move on, because otherwise I feel like I just lose my mind. But yeah, that pretty much takes care of that submission. So now we're going to go on to the last submission of this part of Army Anonymous. And this submission says, can we talk about the constant? They are announcing a whole a world tour slash OT7 album on Twitter every time Army bombs restock or the wind changes. Is borderline disrespectful to everything the members said in their festive dinner since then. And this is from England. Yeah, like especially because we've just gotten the announcement that they're not going to come back until at least 2025. I think we can all be, I think we can all know by now that there's not going to be another OT7 album for like 2 years. I think we can all relax now.
Yeah, I definitely think that this whole this means a tour is coming, this means a tour is coming.
No.
It's not, sweetie. I'm sorry. Like, I get it. Map of the Soul 7 was taken from us. It was ripped out of our cut dry bleeding hands. But it's just an unfortunate loss we are going to have to deal with. But I think that does mean that in a few years, when a tour does happen, it's gonna be great, in my opinion. Like, because if Map of the Soul 7 was supposed to be what they said it was supposed to be, then like the next one is gonna be great. And I think it's good to, look forward to that, but like everyone, if the army bomb restocks, like it's fine. Like, you don't need to feel like you need to start preparing how to like go through like those practice ticket sale like websites to make sure you get what's it called? Stage seating. I can't rem I was trying to figure floor seating. Sorry. Oh my gosh. I really could not. The sun went down and it's dark and I haven't turned on lights yet, so I think my brain just turned off. But yeah, if you see the restocks, it's fine. Relax. The tour, start saving now for tickets if you want. That'd be great. Put away like $5 every month or something. I don't know. You'll probably have enough for a ticket by then. But yeah, you're good. Breathe.
Exactly. I think that people just need to stop trying to, like, I get it, we're all traumatized because we did not get this tour, but at the same time, they have given us the confirmation that they're all enlisting, or at least, a couple of them are enlisting, and that they're going to come back in 2025. So I think that now that we've gotten that confirmation, we can stop speculating as to when the next OT7 album or when the next tour is, because for 2023 and 2024, it's not happening. I'm sorry if that is not what you expected, but it's just the truth, and the sooner you understand that, the better, because we still have, all the other members left who have yet to release their solo work. I mean, we have Jin, who's new song is going to be released next week. And then we have the other five members who have yet to confirm anything about their own solo work. And so that's most likely going to be coming out sometime between the beginning of 2023 and the end of 2024, or even into like mid 2025. We don't know. But either way, I think that now we just need to focus on what is actually confirmed and not have to worry about the speculation, because at this point, I'm pretty sure we can narrow it down.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else to add to that. I think that sums it up pretty good. Yeah, let's just, for now, let's just focus on the solo albums that are going to be eventually coming.
Precisely. And so with that not only finishes the internal fandoms issues category, but that also finishes the number of submissions that we were going to do for today's part of Army Anonymous. And so if you have gotten to the end of this episode, we thank you for listening, and we will come in with the final part tomorrow.
All right, yeah, bye for now.